Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, everyone. It's obvious. I'm John Verhoeven, and I was a cop back in the 80s in Sydney.
And I'm Paul Verhoeven, John's son. I'm an author, and I wrote two books about Dad's time as a cop.
The first five seasons of Loose Unit spanned my time in general duties, forensics, my time as a firefighter, and even my stint running a funeral home.
This season, we're visiting the locations of Australia's most notorious, baffling, horrific crimes, and looking at what happened there.
From Snowtown to the family. From the Morehouse murders to haunted highways. This season of Loose Units is your go-to guide to the worst crimes in Australian true crime history.
Welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files. Last week, Roger Rogerson, one of the most notorious figures in Australian true crime history, and yes, he did also used to be a cop, he passed away. And Dad and I spent last week talking about, a little bit about at least, Roger Rogerson's crawl into infamy. But this week, Dad's going to keep exploring with us Roger Rogerson as a figure. Dad, last week's episode, I feel like we really only scratched the surface of who Roger Rogerson was. Now, a lot of people have been getting in touch. I got some friends in the States, actually, who got in touch and said, did you hear Roger Rogerson died? It's something of a damning indictment of Rogerson that people, even as far as America, know who he was.
Yes, well, as listeners are aware, I went to the Redfern Police Academy.
Yeah.
The building is still there.
Mm-hmm.
But I have walked in the grounds to sort of get the vibe from what I experienced. Some may say mild trauma going to that academy.
Well, they say going back to your old high school is usually a pretty unpleasant experience. I can't imagine how much worse it is.
Well, if that's now, but it's now a temple, a religious temple. I think it's Taoist. Yes,
okay,
a Taoist temple, which is very beautiful. And I've stood in, I was going to say the hallowed grounds. I won't say that.
Well, I guess they're kind of hallowed, you know.
Yeah, but I've stood where I actually passed out, in terms of not as in became unconscious, but the passing out parade.
Yeah.
And the same parade that Roger Rogerson and his family, his two daughters, and his wife, stood and received the accolades of the state for the extreme act of bravery in apprehending some armed offenders. And I think it was it would not have been sort of lost on the crowd the day he received his award that he actually didn't kill them. I think the guys that they were fortunate that he arrested them and just didn't kill them as he did in other cases, some known, some clearly not known. And to stand in a place with such, one could almost say, a dark history and then see it as a Taoist temple is a wonderful contradiction, and I think there's a sense of irony there.
It's like a cleansing of the space as well, a little bit, you know, taking it from a one, you know, energy wise. It's kind of, seems like a nice thing to do.
And then, so I was standing by myself.
Yeah.
Occasionally I go there just to reflect. And then I walked over to the gymnasium and I stood there. I couldn't believe that very place is frozen in time. That place where I was in the locker room, as is very well documented and detailed in your first book. So I'm going to give a version of that story, But for people that don't have or would like to sort of drill in a bit deeper, go and read the book. If this ever became a, well, let's just hypothesize and say became a TV series or a movie, this particular scene that I'm going to talk about, which directly relates to Roger Rogerson, this would be highly prominent because it was such an extraordinary event. It's an event, Paul, that sometimes when something happens a long time ago and it seems so unbelievable, you really have to question, did it really happen?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure everyone out there has had those rare and unforgettable moments in time. It might be experience something, hearing something, seeing something, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. But the murder of Warren Lanfranchi, who was a heroin dealer and back in the 80s we used to call them stick-up merchants. How's that for a phrase? In other words, armed robbery. And, I mean, the stick-up is obvious. Stick your hands up, which I don't know whether that happens anymore, but it certainly used to happen sort of during the 1920s and 30s in Midtown America. I mean, the whole of New South Wales, in fact, the whole of Australia was buzzing with the news of Warren Lanfranchi being shot. And I remember I was in the locker room. And no one really knew what had happened. It was very sort of secretive, even though they today say, yes, there were sort of something like 15 police at the scene.
But what you're saying is that you were at the academy when Lanfranchi was shot.
Yeah. Well, I was actually doing secondary training.
Oh, that's when you go. So you've gone out for a year and then come back to the academy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you spent a year as a cop, basically, like a trainee cop. You've been paired up with different people. You've seen some shit at this point. You kind of stagger back to the academy, having had a dose of the real world, and you're there to kind of close out your training, basically. Gotcha.
And okay. I overheard a conversation with two or three cadets.
Yep.
Probationary constables. And they were talking in hushed tones. I mean, for God's sake, if you're going to talk in hushed tones about something relatively controversial, the last place on earth you'd think to talk about something like that if you didn't possibly expect other people in the near vicinity to sort of at least pique their interest, you know, you're not going to talk about the death of Warren Lanfranchi, which is what the conversation was about. Turns out that one of the guys, one of the probationary constables, had either A, been at the scene of the shooting, or knew someone who was there, because the information was so scary. And I was actually in... The only thing separating me from these three, well, police officers, was a line of lockers, and I was being incredibly quiet because I realised no one else was around and I didn't want to get caught, because you just don't know how deep these things go.
Yeah.
And I became very... I won't say scared, but certainly my senses were heightened. And then I thought, I'm listening. And then I realized that I was actually I was in this sort of little area that was next to the showers. And then I thought, shit, if these guys come into the showers, they're going to see me. They won't have heard me. So I hid under the benches. Sure enough, the three of them walked past and went to the showers, and I made good my escape, but I heard enough information to know that it was heavy. It was a heavy scene, and it was a scene that the media, there was a frenzy talking about the execution of Warren Lanfranchi. And to this day, very few people fully understand the reasons why Warren Lanfranchi was shot. Now, the reason, the sort of straw that broke Rogerson's back, because they were all interconnected, heroin dealers were always, there was they were skimming money off the top that had to go to the detectives. The detectives, primarily in the squads and at Darlinghurst, you know, they were part of the operation. They were sort of at the top of the triangle, and that's how they operated. These detectives back then, they were making large sums of tax-free money, and the story goes Warren Lanfranchi and two other offenders were on their way, traveling north across the Sydney Harbour Bridge towards North Sydney to do an armed robbery. I believe it was on a Friday afternoon. Friday afternoons were always when the banks had most cash because people were going to get paid. Most people back then got paid weekly, and they got paid in cash. You'd go into the bank. That's just how it was back then.
Gotcha.
So if you're going to do a bank job, you're going to go when there's when it's bulging with cash.
You want to wait until it's full so that you have... Full. When you steal stuff, you get the maximum
Get the max.
Yep.
And this is in the day when the tellers had no protection. Armed robbers would go into a bank, simply jump the counter, hold a sawn-off shoddy, which is simply a shotgun, which is a big, big weapon, mighty powerful. They'd put it in a vise. They'd with a hacksaw, cut most of the barrel off. The barrels, because they're generally pump action shotguns had two barrels, and if you got hit with one of those, in at close range, it would definitely blow large bits of your body up, just into sort of it'd vaporize you. You just turn into a bloody miasma of bone and blood.
Oh boy.
Because I've been to those when I was in forensics. I've been to plenty of those where people have been shot point blank and it's fucking terrible. So you've got this sort of this incredible fear. They're on the way to do the stick up. Warren Lanfranchi was in the back of the vehicle. He was lying down because as the listeners who've listened to this podcast for years will know that generally speaking, three in a car is a number that will draw the attention of police. Two in a car, not so bad.
Okay.
So they go, there's an off-ramp at the northern end of the Harbour Ridge that takes you up this sort of fairly undulating, fairly quick sort of a hill, takes you up towards North Sydney Police Station, and a very vigilant highway patrol officer on a motorcycle saw the car, something wasn't quite right, pulls them over. Now, these guys are just about to do an armed robbery. Warren Lanfranchi is in the back lying down with a sawn-off 22 caliber rifle. Okay? Imagine that. Imagine being in that car. You look in your rear vision mirror, you see a highway patrol cyclist with the lights, his lights, his blue lights sort of spinning around, and you have to be really, really calm. The problem is that the cyclist pulls up behind the car, which means he has to walk past the back seat.
Yep, okay.
And inadvertently, and as one would imagine, what one would think would happen did happen. As he's approaching the car, he would have been approaching more than likely on the driver's side because it's the driver he wants to talk to. That's the dangerous side, so he would park his bike in such a way that it would give him a bit of a corridor of safety.
Yeah.
As he's approaching the driver, he looks down and he sees Warren Lanfranchi lying on the back seat holding a 22 caliber rifle. Warren Lanfranchi instinctively gets up, points the 22 sawn-off rifle at the highway patrol officer and fires. Gun discharges. Car fucks off with three on board. Highway patrol guy runs back to his motorbike, gets on to police radio, VKG. Meanwhile, this car's gone. Roger Rogerson, he knew, the word got back to Rogerson, that Warren Lanfranchi had done this. And as far as Rogerson was concerned, this was... shall we say, an opportunity, an excuse perhaps, to take him out.
Yep.
Warren Lanfranchi was then lured to a location in Chippendale to quote Roger Rogerson, there were up to 15 police there. I find that I don't even know what to say. It could have been a situation where, this is a hypothesis that you will probably never have heard and will never hear again, that Roger Rogerson had the whole crew there to just reaffirm his status in terms of top dog.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's going to actually show police, including junior police, how he operates. And Warren Lanfranchi was executed. Roger Rogerson said it was self-defense, which means Warren Lanfranchi would have had to have either A, gone to the meeting with a gun, or B, a gun would have been planted.
Yeah.
On okay. Lanfranchi.
Okay.
Now, Sally Ann Huckstep, who had a fascinating life, she was very, very smart, came from a very good family in the eastern suburbs. Her stepmother, which is not an uncommon story, had been, quite frankly, violent and vicious, assaulted her regularly. Sally Ann had a stepsister. Of course, the stepmother, that was her natural sister, and she preferred her blood relative over Sally. And, you know, she'd take... Sally did modelling for some very famous department stores. She was attractive. As I said, she was very, very smart. She was really clever. But because of her domestic situation, she ended up working at a very famous disco, the Disco Go-Go, which was a very famous sort of nightclub in the Whiskey A Go-Go, sorry, Disco, God. And that was a notorious hangout for criminals and gangsters. And she started working there, and she got involved in drugs, the drug scene. She meets Warren Lanfranchi, and then 6 months after they'd been living together, Warren Lanfranchi was executed. Now, as an aside to this story, listeners, I was at the City Morgue at Glebe, and a member of staff said to me, would I like to see Warren Lanfranchi's body? And as I've said before, all bodies at the morgue were simply laid out on these stainless steel trolleys, and
yep.
They're all naked, every one of them. They don't gotcha. They don't have sheets and blankets. That's only in the movies. And one of the I walked up to Warren Lanfranchi's body. I imagine I'm one of the few people that actually got to see what I'm about to explain. And what you're about to hear, I have mentioned it before, but I think it's mainly at the live shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that Warren Lanfranchi, who had some incredibly, let's say, accurately placed bullet holes in his head and upper chest.
What do you mean accurate?
It was as though he'd just stood there and someone had marked out a target and just popped the bullets into him precisely.
An execution, basically.
Oh, it was just, you know, it was, there were no sort of, you know, shots in the legs, the arms. It was all close. It was all, I wasn't there, but it probably came as a real shock to Warren Lanfranchi that moment. Okay. Where you would have seen the gun pointed at you, not knowing that Roger Rogerson, you wouldn't believe for a minute that you're actually going to get shot. You'd think maybe this is just a warning to say, listen, you know, we're not going to accept you trying to kill police. It's not on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
But the thing that was extraordinary about that day, and this is a scene etched in my mind until I die, is that a detective, and this is sort of a 99.99% balance of probabilities, had got Warren Lanfrancy's hand and wrapped it around his own penis to give the impression that he was playing with himself. Now, that sort of thing, A, showed extreme sort of disdain and disgust for Lanfranchi, but to me, it's an extraordinary thing to do, and the detective that did that must have been a particularly, well, I don't even know how to describe that type of person. It's sort of the ultimate thing to do to someone.
It says to me confidence. It says it speaks to me a confidence that you're not going to get caught, right?
Yeah.
If you've been operating with impunity for a long time, that's probably the kind of thing you feel like you could get away with. So the idea there is that if you put the hand around the penis and then rigor mortis sets in, then it goes, for lack of a better term, hard, and as a result, the corpse has a stiffy.
It's incredible.
Yep.
To see that was, you know, I wonder, listeners and Paul, if I had have seen that today, I'm wondering whether the temptation would have been to take a photograph, because it's so unbelievable.
Wait, you or just someone?
No, just me. Take a photo. I think phones are very... Well, there's the case a few months ago of the people that took film of the school teacher being bitten in two by a great white. And there are all these different... Yeah, that happened in Sydney. We can chat about it on Thursday if you like. But it's all about filming, having access. They know that police, even today, take photographs. They know paramedics are taking film in the back of ambulances. I mean, it's a real, you know, it's a whole different topic. But, yeah, things have changed a lot. But the thing is, Paul, Sally Ann Huckstep was the girlfriend of Warren Lanfranchi. Now, on the 6th of February, 1986... at around about 11 p.m., Sally gets a phone call from a very, very notorious drug dealer by the name of Warren Richards. Now, he's an associate of Arthur and Eddie Smith and Roger Rogerson, okay? So you can see there's a very strong connection. Sally gets the call. She tells her flatmate, and it's in Edgecliff, which is, I could almost throw a tennis ball to her apartment from where we live, and... she says she'll be back in 5 to 10 minutes. The next morning in Centennial Park, at about 8:45, a jogger is running through the park and he sees a body in a pond, lying face down. Runs to the rangers and they get a little boat, and they, the place was called Busby's Pond, and they row out and they grab this body, and they pull the body back into the shore, drag the body face down up onto this little beach, and the detectives are called in, and They roll the body over, and one of the detectives says, "That's Huckstep." Okay? Now, Sally Ann Huckstep was a thorn in the side of Roger Rogerson, because what had happened 5 years earlier, because Sally Ann Huckstep ultimately ended up on the street. So she was a journalist, highly articulate, got involved in the drug scene, but she also was a prostitute. And there were lots of famous places in Darlinghurst that I could take. Next time you're in Sydney, we can go for a drive, we can go for a walk. Up near St. Vincent's Hospital, there were some notorious locations. One of them was called The Wall, and these were infamous. And the prostitutes that worked to these areas did so with the consent and protection of the detectives from Darlinghurst Police Station, and also some of the squads. Huckstep was one of these girls. And what she did, and she signed her own death warrant, she went on 60 Minutes, and she basically said, and that's a very high-profile show, I think you'll agree, she said, Roger Rogerson, one of the most highly decorated police officers, shot dead her lover, Warren Lanfranchi, in cold blood. And then, within hours of her saying that, she went into hiding. She then goes into police internal affairs, where Christine, your mum, worked, same building. She goes into internal affairs, and she gives internal affairs a complete rundown, every single cent she'd ever paid police. She must have kept an incredible diary for 10 years. She gave the names of every single police officer she'd paid money to.
Wow.
And, you know, she understood after that interview at Internal Affairs that...
The bravery, I swear to God.
Unbelievable.
That's and so fucking brave. Because if you know... You always hope that people are keeping notes. You know, you always hope that that corrupt people will get taken down by somebody who was just taking the right photos, writing down the right license plates, doing the, you know, that's incredible.
Mm. And that's of course, can you imagine being one of numerous detectives in New South Wales? You know, some of them may have retired. Some of them may have moved to the country. Some of them may have gone back to uniform and be, you know, running a lovely country fire station up in the Hunter Valley at, you know, a wine area. You know, everything's going sweet. You've moved on. You don't look over your shoulder. You've moved away from that rotten, corrupt, seedy, low life existence you led as a corrupt detective in New South Wales, and you're thinking that everything's cool. And all of a sudden, Sally Ann Huckstep comes along, and just goes, you know, tells internal affairs. And of course, the problem with internal affairs, as Christine well knows, and probably everyone knows, is that they also were not squeaky clean, because they were recruiting from the ranks of detectives. And Christine has told me stories.
So what you're saying, that people in internal affairs would also be...
Mate, trust me, it's happened to me before. Oh, yes, it happened to me. I had to go to internal affairs once. Remember that infamous story about my... About my buddy?
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. Guys, go and read Electric Blue. It's fucked. It's
heavy. So yeah, I then, you know, went to internal affairs. I won't go on about it because it's in the book. But it's a great story about, you think people... that you can really trust, because going to internal affairs, I imagine in any police jurisdiction on this planet, would be a terrifying time.
Yeah.
Particularly if you've got a buddy, a friend, a colleague, a mate that you socialise with as well, and you don't really ever know what your mate's going to say.
Mm.
Is he going to fold? Is he going to sort of maintain the line? And the detectives that are interviewing police, can you imagine the type of detective, can you imagine the skill and the professionalism and the sheer cunning that you would require as an interviewing detective working in internal affairs to interview, for example, a detective sergeant from the homicide squad?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's the melding of the minds. It's a battle. Mm. But then again, you go in, you're going to be interviewed for a certain thing, crime, you witnessed, you were involved in police corruption, and all of a sudden, you're sitting across a detective that you've worked with, that you've gone out with, you've socialized with, you've partied with, you know their wife, their kids, you know their parents, you've been to their Christmas parties, and that person is interviewing you. I mean, I'm not saying that it was always crooked, but I experienced some things in internal affairs. I remember I was interviewed, got back to the station, and everyone at the station already knew what I'd said.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. Like, they just pick up the phone, and it was heavy. So you can only imagine what happened when this Sally Ann Huckstep comes in. I'm absolutely hypothesizing. Listeners, leave it up to your own imagination. This woman comes in who's already notorious. I imagine if she had have walked, or when she walked through the hallowed grounds of police headquarters, which was an entire city building about 20 stories high, full of police, including the commissioner, I mean, there would have been deathly silence because everyone would have known. And she would have got into that lift, and she would have pressed a certain floor, and everyone would know that that's internal affairs. Up she goes.
Second she does that, it's over, right?
Yeah. And
it's over.
Yeah. And then the word gets out. Internal affairs, one could imagine, they then told certain people that, wow, she's just told us so much. And all of a sudden, you know, the station sergeant working up at the Hunter Valley near the vineyards, about to retire, big smile on his face, all of a sudden, oh shit, it's all going to come back and it's going to crucify me. So they deal with it. And as Christine and I had a discussion about an hour ago, going to be careful what I say now, but they say that they received recordings from inside the jail that a certain heavy crim, Nettie Smith, famous, notorious, apparently he'd somehow or other admitted to killing Sally Ann Huckstep.
Right.
That's not the story I've heard. I've heard other things.
What have you heard?
Well, a few years ago, I heard, I had it corroborated from two different sources that in fact it was a police officer that killed Sally Ann Huckstep, but not one that was working in New South Wales. That's what I heard.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Holy shit!
So that's heavy.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Good morning, everyone.
But anyway, so that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And on that note, Paul, I feel as though we should wrap this up.
Okay. oh, my God. Every time we have one of these Roger Rogerson episodes, I am a little worried. But as you said, you've said over the years, Dad, you've said many times, you'll start telling a Rogerson story or you'll finish telling one and you'll say, but he's very much still very much alive.
Hmm.
And that'll be the caveat with which we sort of tuck ourselves in and stop going off on tangents. There's still lots of, as you said, Rogerson wasn't the only corrupt detective involved in these things. He was part of a network, he was part of a system, and like you said, a lot of these people have retired or passed on. And they have, you know, that's always the fear, that you think you pull off a heist, you get away with something, you hurt somebody, nobody notices, you move on with your life. Years pass. And then if some fucking podcasters, one of whom is a ex-cop, kind of start, you know, giving a bit of lip on a podcast, and suddenly it becomes common knowledge that XYZ happened. I guess the fact that Rogerson's dead wouldn't be so much protection for us, because the fact is, it's not like, you know, it's still dangerous to talk openly about some of these things, is what I'm saying. Is that a fair assessment?
Definitely fair. But also to be considered is that time also has a tendency to sometimes sort of confuse and muddle things.
You know, it's okay.
Very, very difficult. And I sort of sometimes when I'm telling these stories, I look back and I think, does that kind of gel? You know how you try and remember things from a long, long time ago, and sometimes it becomes an amalgam of different facts blending in with how you were feeling and thoughts and things other people have said and what you've read and what you've seen and what you've heard and what you've dreamt. Who knows? I mean, these are very, to sort of untangle these stories sometimes, but there's always a kernel of hardcore truth. And that's why sometimes the devil's in the detail.
Yeah, and also there's a thing called the Mandela effect, which is back in the early 2000s, a woman got online because she was admitting online that she was... Have I talked about this with you before, Dad?
No.
She was embarrassed that she... She basically went, look, I thought Nelson Mandela died in prison. And somehow she convinced herself of this fact. And what happened was thousands of people replied, but he did die in prison.
Mm.
And she's like, no. Somehow there are some cultural things that people can latch onto. What happens is you basically file similar bits of information away in certain parts of your head, and then when your brain goes to reach into that filing cabinet, sometimes it grabs the file next to the you know what I mean? It grabs an adjacent file by mistake.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what happens. Sometimes especially with Dad, we've been doing this show for thousands of hours over almost 6 years. It is very likely that sometimes you are going to reach back and grab the file that is file over. And that's part of, frankly, the charm of this show, is that sometimes it's going to be a scooch unreliable. I don't think anyone's going to hold that against you. But that happens. So, yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
It's been it's been great chatting, Paul, as usual.
Yes, it's been amazing. We have so much coming up later this week, by the way. We've got some fascinating stuff to talk about. Plus, I sat down with the cast of The Dry 2, with Force of Nature. The Dry 2, I sat down with the entire cast, Eric Banner, Robert Connolly, Deborah Lee Furness, all of them, to talk about this amazing crime series. A couple of years back when The Dry came out, I talked with Eric and Jane Harper, the author of The Dry, to talk about that film on a Loose Units, on a spin-off episode. So we're going to be having a spin-off episode about The Dry 2 coming up as well.
Love it.
And we've got Loose Ends, and we've got more true crime. So you are in for an absolutely packed February, guys. So it's a great time to be a listener of Loose Units. So make sure you head across, tell your friends about the show, go and grab the books, grab Loose Units and Electric Blue. They are, by the way, if you want them, to get them cheap or get them for friends. Father's Day's coming up, I think. Is Father's Day coming up?
Oh, you're so funny, Paul. But no, my birthday's coming up.
Oh, shit. Dad's birthday's coming up. You know what? The ultimate present for Dad is buying Electric Blue for your dad. Why not? So, yeah, Booktopia is the best place to grab that. But look, thank you so much for listening to this Roger Rogerson episode of Loose Units, The Shadow Files. We hope you're having a great week. And we will see you very, very soon for more Loose Units. Bye, everyone.
Cheerio.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.